Welcome back to Between Two Palms. I am your host, D Palm. Before we introduce the real star of the show, I want to thank everyone who's been along for the ride. We're at the last episode of this little side project we put together. This was a way for me to honestly figure out how to rewatch all the Marvel movies and somehow not avoid my wife for 40 hours, which would take me to do this, which is a literal week. And it was a good way for me to spend more time with the person who means the most to me and also with the thing that probably also means the most to me.
Did you just say that I'm as important as the series of movies?
I said that you're the person that means the most to me, and this is the thing that means the most to me. You can take that as you will. But as I was saying before, I was so incredibly interrupted. I just want to thank everyone who let us be a part of their day by listening to us ramble about Marvel movies and talk about things that I care about and convincing her to care about them almost as much. But not least, let's introduce our co-host, not guest host, just the other person on the podcast. Hi, Susan.
Hi. Hello.
How are you?
I'm great. It's Wednesday.
Yeah.
You know, hanging out, not at work.
Every podcast, don't tell you when we record, but hey, that I'm just kidding. So we're going to get started with the last of our Between Two Palms editions for the MCU. We'll be talking about possibly the future of this podcast at the end of it. But I do want to get us right into it because I've got a couple more things to record tonight. We start by talking about the end of what I'm going to call the beginning of, or I guess the beginning of the end, because after this movie, only two more movies and then a flashback movie before this Thursday's Endgame. I hope you got your tickets. If you have not gotten your tickets yet and you plan on watching it in LA or DC, please go to the MCR Network site. Get your tickets for our live screening. It's a private screening. Watch it with your favorite podcasters. Out East, we're going to be having two live shows, after the movie, so you can hear us all react in real time. The second live show is the only one with tickets left. The first live show was very sold out. But today we're talking about Black Panther. It was directed by Ryan Coogler. It was produced by, you guessed it, Kevin Feige. It cost $200 million to make, and it made, I hope you're all sitting down, $1.347 billion. And Susan, they told me diversity wouldn't sell across the globe.
They're wrong.
They told me that you couldn't have a predominantly or overwhelmingly black cast and have it sell overseas. They told us that to our faces.
Well, they were incorrect. They misspoke.
When those Fox leaks happened, or the Sony leaks happened, the email said they couldn't have Denzel as a lead because it wouldn't open in China.
Denzel? Come on.
This movie, with its black-ass cast and its black-ass setting, and it's black ass music, won a whole lot of green. And I know it was touted as kind of a cultural movement. What was it like for you? Because you and I watched it in an overwhelmingly black theater the morning before we flew up to New York for a wedding. We rewatched it recently, obviously, for the podcast. What was the, so we watched it kind of as it came out. Watching the kind of impact and people, the discussions around it afterwards, did it kind of reframe how you watch it the second time?
Yeah. I mean, I hadn't watched it in its entirety again until we watched it. And I mean, going to see that movie with you and in the theater that we went to see it in, I just felt really lucky to be able to be a fly on the wall. Like, it wasn't, you know, in that moment, that movie was not for me. And it was such a wonderful experience to see, like, just, it brought so many people, it brings so many people such joy. And it's great. I mean, we took off work to go see this movie.
It's very true. I was like, we have our flights at a certain time, but we have to see this movie before we're on the
plane. And it was worth every second of it. It was so fun.
It brought the Marvel Cinematic Universe its very first Academy Award wins. Wins for Best Costume Design, Best Original Score, and Best Production Design. It was the first superhero film ever to receive a Best Picture nomination. All disrespect to The Dark Knight. The movie is basically a updated retelling and kind of adaptation into the Marvel Cinematic Universe of the origin of Black Panther. They do a very good job, I think, using Sterling K. Brown because it's kind of the unseen narrator. And you figure out why he's narrating later on. But as the movie opens, it kind of gives you this snapshot into lore, which I think is really helpful for a movie like this, because like a Guardians, it's a dramatic departure from the Marvel Universe we know. And by having a little animated intro kind of explaining where the Vibranium Man came from and how the tribes of Wakanda make up this nation, I thought it was a really good job of creating a setting that it's imperative that they establish strong because they're going to blow it up in Act Two.
Yes. I mean, they do such a good job of creating a world within a world, also showing us things that we've never seen.
Right.
I mean, it's great.
Right. Things we never thought to ask to see. Even
Yeah.
something as small as, so we know this occurs immediately after Civil War because the news of the death of T'Chaka is still breaking. And so I think it's interesting when he starts bringing in characters and bringing back characters to say, oh, and I want you here because my father is dead. They go, he and Okoye wrestle Nakia, or bring back Nakia from her undercover assignment. And she starts talking about how the advances of Wakanda can help the world. And this is very important for, I don't know, the rest of the goddamn movie. At the same time as T'Challa is taking his throne, there's almost an opposite number, which you see in a lot of the Marvel movies, Iron Man, Thor to an extent, an opposite number who has similar powers rising on their own. And this was the birth of what some are calling an iconic villain, what I'm just calling is a well-written villain portrayed by a very charismatic actor, Michael B. Jordan's Killmonger. It's interesting to see kind of the discussions that came out of this. Like the Killmonger was right. I'm like, actually, Nakia said it in like scene two.
Yeah. Michael B. Jordan kills it as
Murders
this
it.
character. I
Yeah,
mean,
yeah.
he's, I don't know that if I've seen him in another role where he's the bad guy. And I don't know. I don't know that I would have been able to envision him playing a role like that before. And he is so good.
It's interesting because he brings a level of almost menace. And
Yes.
every second he's on screen, like from the very moment you introduce him in the museum,
Yeah.
it's a very concerted effort by the director and actor to give a performance where every motion, every glance is laced with not just meaning, but like I said, menace.
Well, it's almost like joy because
Right.
he has a cause that he firmly believes in, and he has honed his skills to be able to accomplish what he wants to, and he's doing it.
And more than anything else, he has a plan.
Yes,
And I think
exactly.
that's super important, super interesting in the way he's portrayed early on is that you're right, it's that gleeful menace, but it's also the knowledge that this is supposed to happen.
Yes. I mean, and later on he essentially spells out to us what he has done, how long, and how hard he has worked to be able to accomplish what he wants to accomplish, which is like fucked up, but it's hard for you to hate him completely.
I really enjoy, well, not for me. I really enjoyed the South Korea chase scene when they bust Claw for the first time.
Oh man. Yes.
It's so much more. I've watched the movie probably three or four times now. It's so much more kinetic than I remember it being. It's a lot more action and activity, and Okoye and Nakia, like their car chase is amazing. And then just I don't know the technology, the way their technological advancements are treated to get by the rest of the world. It's like watching magic. It's like when Thor and Loki then came to Earth in phase one.
Yeah. No, it is quite literally a different world, and from that world they bring their own magic. No, I love that scene too. I mean, as soon as Okoye throws off that wig, you know that shit is about to
Iconic scene.
go down. Like,
Iconic
just give
moment.
that woman a spear. Give her a spear. Like, what else is she has like what else is she gonna do? I mean, everything, I hope. Everything, I hope. But oh, yeah. No, I just have to say that the level of like the extremely awesome level of girl power in this movie is fan it's just so good, it's so satisfying, and they lean into it so hard, and it's great.
It's amazing. And when the Killmonger and his team end up retrieving Claw, sacrificing the woman he allegedly was in love with, first clue this is not a good person with good ideas.
Yep.
And then he kills Claw because that was always the plan, because that was the thing that would get him entrance to the place he was told he'd never be allowed to. And as we know
Yes.
his full backstory, yes, it's dressed in this desire to go home, but he also spells out, Everett Ross does, this is what he does. He goes in to stabilize his nations.
Yep.
This is his specialty.
No,
This
I
is
think it's
not
funny.
a young man yearning for home. This is not an added resource. He seems to be exploited for his own personal gain. Ooh. And he can dress it up and he can make it sound all pretty, but at the core of it is a megalomaniacal desire to rule all and to conquer. And I'm not saying it reflects anyone else currently in power in certain countries. I'm just saying, don't think it's it just seems like, hey, it's just thinly veiled excuses for a power grab.
I feel like you're trying to convince me that I should hate him.
He orders the heart-shaped herb burn and then chokes a grandmother.
I mean, listen, there's clearly, I don't know, I guess white guilt. I don't know what you want me to tell you. He talks about helping people and I don't know.
The people who talk about helping other people with bombs are generally the bad guys.
I hear you. I'm not saying that he's a good guy.
All you gotta do is be pretty. I'm sorry. You gotta be pretty and like dress up with philosophy and some nice flowery words. Susan will at least listen.
He is very good looking, you know, clearly.
Hot.
So that helps.
Hot.
That helps for sure.
Let's talk about some more characters in the movie besides Captain Man Candy. I really enjoyed his sister. I really enjoyed Sherry in this movie. I thought that her presence, it let not be as serious. Because, again, this is a pretty serious movie about the overthrow of a nation and the reclamation of the throne. But between what are those and everything else that happens in between, like, she not only is obviously the smartest person we met in the Marvel Universe, but she's probably the funniest.
Yes. No, definitely. I feel like they write her character really well. She's so smart, but like the comedic lines that they give her, it's like she's so young.
Yeah, they remind you. Do you
even know how old she is? Yeah.
I don't think so.
No, she's fantastic. And like, let's show women, being scientists. It's fantastic.
Well, it's women being scientists, which also was directly related to a spike in STEM, I guess, investments in young women last year, which is pretty cool, as we mentioned with the Brave and the Hunger Games thing, spiking interest in archery. So representation fucking matters. But what I think was even cooler was Act 3, when we get the big, of course, Marvel fight scene. The people on the side of right are the women, the Dora Maje, the actual high guard of Wakanda. Yep. And the people who are easily swayed by this pretty boy with pretty words is the men, which is funny on a lot of levels. It's so interesting that, and just watching, of course, he's commandeered that other Panther suit that you see in Act 1, because if they show you two suits and they don't show you the second one, guess what you're going to see at the end of the movie? The other one. Like, of course we are. Like, some certain things are the Ironmonger all over again, but I really enjoyed like the scale of the fight, where it felt like a civil war, an internal squabble. But the fight between the two Panthers, I guess I'll use for lack of a better term, felt uber personal.
Agreed. I do. When I was thinking about this movie earlier today, the one character that I didn't come to mind as being like, yeah, for me was T'Challa. And I don't know if it's because there's just so many amazing characters that get to shine. And part of it, I think, is just because of his storyline. You know, like, you're getting so much background info, you're learning about this world.
This storyline, yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, at some point, he's like quite literally asleep.
That's my problem with a lot of the Netflix series when they take the hero off the board. You're right.
Wait, say it again?
It's my problem with a lot of the Netflix series when they take the hero off the board for 3 episodes.
Oh, you're right.
It's super annoying.
Yeah. But I'm excited to see, understand more about him as a character and as a
hero. I thought they did a good job of, while his plot was, like you said, very much the driving force of the movie, they did a good job of, in those quieter moments, kind of, I thought, infusing his story. I think that his story is less interesting because he's not supposed to be interesting. He's a king. Like, he's not going to be the funny one or the smart one or the bravest one. But if he's brave, it's because he's the king. So it's one of those things that he's kind of constrained by the title. But I thought that one of the moments in the ancestral plane was really very telling, when his father says to him, you cannot, it's hard to be a good man and a great king.
Mm-hmm.
And you're trying to do both. And I thought that because his growth in squabbles were so intertwined with the larger themes of the movie, it's easier for them to get washed out. But if you look at T'Challa from the beginning of Civil War to the man we find him at the end of Black Panther, buying a property in Oakland and going before the UN and revealing at least some part of Wakanda that we know 2 years later, they still have the force field up, which is interesting. I thought that it was, I see what you're saying. It's less enthralling, but I think it's there.
Agreed. And you're right. I mean, you do see him evolve a lot. But I guess to your point, like he's a king.
He's, you know,
and he's measured and mindful, and those aren't necessarily the like character attributes that are gonna like wow your socks off. Like he does a great job, and
he's the anti Tony Stark.
Yeah, totally. Yes.
It's a quiet charisma, but it leads to some funny moments in the comics that I hope we eventually get on film, including Panther slapping Tony, telling him to calm down and think straight. Other characters who kind of stole their scenes, Winston Duke as M'Baku, the Jabari tribe as a whole. So you don't know this. So in the comics, M'Baku is a character called Man-Ape.
Oh.
Yeah, it's real bad. It's real bad. And they did a lot of saving here. Like, it was one of those people like, that's Man-Ape. Like, you cannot say Man-Ape on screen. You cannot. Like, when they were like, we cast M'Baku, I was like, there's no one going to say anything. I was like, could someone confirm and just be going by a civilian name of M'Baku and not potentially problematic name of, I don't actually want to repeat it on the podcast again. But I thought they did a good job with that character. He's a problematic, obviously, character, but I thought they redeemed him well.
All the ladies enjoyed M'Baku.
Are you done?
I just needed to say it. I needed it to be...
Everett Ross, Martin Freeman, the Hobbit, who is one of three white people allowed to speak in this movie, which is hilarious. Angela Bassett, just a continuing tradition of filling in like filler parts with Oscar nominated actors. Angela Bassett is Ramonda.
Yep, just Forrest Whitaker,
as Zuri.
Yes.
Andy fucking Serkis as a soon to be murdered Ulysses Claw.
Right? He's just used as like a tool to get us from different storylines. I feel like he just like pops in and shits linked together.
SoundCloud. I want a SoundCloud link.
Oh,
I want to see if he's any good. He offered it in the movie. I hope it's real. But yeah, that's Black Panther, man. I thought it was really strong. I thought it did a good job of introducing these characters, this world, and making the Marvel universe feel like a universe, and obviously be their first largest and most blatant step towards the diversity they've been championing. The next movie on the docket. It's Infinity War, Singular.
Infinity Wars.
How dare you? It's not my Bible. That's weird. But it's close.
What does that mean?
I love this movie, Susan. Let's do the stats, then we'll get into the movie. Stats. Directed by the Russo brothers, which we can now point to as Civil War being the worst Russo brother directed Marvel film. I have not seen Endgame yet, but I'm going to go ahead and count it. Produced by Kevin Feige, all honor to his name. It cost $400 million. It's a high-end estimation. Susan, how much money did this movie make? Guess, just ballpark it. Just ballpark. Give me a number.
$1.8 billion.
$2.048 billion.
I've got the Wikipedia page open in front of me. I didn't want to get it right on the head because you seemed really excited about me guessing it.
Either way would have worked, honestly. This is just okay. I can work with either one of those answers. But thank you for thanks for playing along with the bit. That was a bit, and I appreciate you playing along.
No problem.
Infinity War. It is a sweeping, gargantuan, beautifully balanced epic of a film. And it's basically the marketing budget for Endgame. Like, I'm sorry, they've shown us nothing for this next movie. Basically, they and for people who say, oh, it was so easy and brilliant to do the snap at the end. The snap at the end apparently was, one, contentious within Marvel, and two, a ballsy fucking pick.
Because it killed everybody.
Not even that. If they don't pull it off, if the movie isn't compelling enough for the snap to happen and for the audience to say, I have to go see the movie next year, the marketing for Endgame would look entirely different.
Hmm.
This movie, the performance of this movie would directly affect the outcomes of this franchise. Like, the next year of fiscal planning for Marvel Studios was based on the activity that happened with this movie. And I'd say breaking the $2 billion threshold means you did pretty fucking good.
Yeah, right.
I don't even know how to talk about this movie. I've been thinking about it all day. Honestly, it's the hero's quest of a young man from Titan who wants to wipe out half the universe.
Oh, God.
And yeah. It makes a lot, but the thing is, the movie makes a lot more sense if you center Thanos.
Hmm.
It's his journey. Every scene, everything that moves in advance of this plot is in his attempts to secure a stone.
He is in control constantly.
He's the hero. We just happen to spend a lot of time with the villains in the movie.
Hmm. No, the whole
from a narrative structure point of view, he loses all his friends in the midst of his quest.
Yep.
Hmm. All his team gets killed.
Interesting.
He actually loses and has to use one of the items acquired to get back his win. A lesson he learned along the way using the time stone is how he ends up winning. It's basically a Harry Potter movie. If Harry Potter were big and purple and with a genocidal. Like, it's basically that.
Acquiring.
From a narrative structure point, it's the Deathly Hallows part one.
Is that the one where he has to find all the different... I don't fucking know. You're the Harry Potter guy.
In the fucking title. That one, I am not going to cover for you on that one.
No, it's cool.
So Infinity War opens with, I guess, just fucking chaos. Because, yes, we're told Xandar was destroyed, and I've got my theories about Endgame that you and I are going to talk about later about that. I'm just going to ramble at you for the next 24 hours. I'm so sorry.
Yay!
Lies. We see that he gets the Power Stone off screen after decimating Xandar. He then acquires the Space Stone by killing half of the Asgardians that are left before
so
the snap.
Up.
So if he snaps, is there just 25% of Asgardians left?
That's a really good point.
Like, what about the planet he's already hit? What about Gamora's planet?
Yeah, they should get a pass or something, right?
Is there an exemption? Can you mail in a homestead exemption like we've already been Thanos'd manually? We would not like to be Thanos'd automatically. Thank you very much for your consideration. They've done the manual. Yeah, we're old school Thanos. We're good. We're version 1.0.
This is just a story about him being lazy. He was already, making some moves, murdering like half of entire populations on different worlds and in different. I mean, and then he's like, this is taking too long. Let's find another method.
Also, I've got the power of a god on my hand. Maybe I just double the resources. Anyway. So he acquires the Space Stone by beating the dog shit out of the Hulk, killing Loki, and setting Thor adrift. Let's do Thor story first. Thor story is awesome. Thor story is picked up by the Guardians. He insults everyone, and he leaves with Rocket and the tree to go build a new axe. His new hammer is fucking amazing. It is the moment in that movie where you're like, oh, Thor is a this because when they make the axe, you're like, oh, it's got screwed arm as a handle, and he fought a son to build it, but is it worth it? And then when the Bifrost opens on Wakanda and he takes out literally the incoming hordes, it's one of the happier cinematic experiences I've ever had.
Yeah. No,
it's so satisfying.
I'm excited to see how they further his relationship with Rocket. Because their interactions in Infinity War it's just fun. I mean, they're two really funny characters, and they play off each other really well. So setting us up for that is great.
The Guardians then head off and try to track down the next Infinity Stone, the Reality Stone. They meet with they get to where they get left where Thor left it with the Collector on Nowhere. And they steal a scene right out of the comics. They end up turning Drax into blocks, and they ribbon out Mantis, things that happened in the original Infinity War in the comics. And, Thanos beats the shit out of him and takes the Reality Stone and steals Gamora. And we get to see the first taste of, I know people blame Peter Quill for the way it ends, but that was the first one. She said, if he gets me, you gotta kill me. And then the bubbles.
Yeah.
We talked about the business of meeting your girlfriend's dad in Homecoming. It's way worse here. Anyway.
It's true.
Now that's Genocidal Despot, who's purple. And yeah, he spirits away. He's taken to, I forget the name of the planet, I apologize, but I do remember who they meet there, the motherfucking Red Skull, and he ends up killing Gamora for the Soul Stone.
Yeah.
From there, it's all strictly academic because he knows who the last two are. He thought one of them was being brought to him by the Ebony Maw, who got overpowered by Iron Man and Iron Spider, which, bravo on making me really feel something for Spider-Man in the short amount of screen time he has. Because when they open with Tony saying, I dreamed you were pregnant, and then he spends the rest of his movie with his surrogate son, only to have that son die in his fucking arms on an alien world. Some assholes, Marvel.
This movie's just sad. You love it so much?
I love this movie. It's beautiful.
It's heartbreaking.
It's why it's beautiful. So let's talk about the fight on Titan because, hey, it's a pretty good fucking plan, and apparently it's Peter Quill's, which is even weirder. But they isolate Thanos. They find a way to get him to a place where you can't take the glove off. And I like the wrinkle they added to the mythos here, where once the glove is on, he has to make a fist to use the stone. It was a narrative device that they did kind of communicate the fight easier. It's not from the comics, but I thought it was a nice touch. They lose. He gets the time stone. And Dr. Strange tells Tony, this is the only way we can possibly win. Does that give you any solace going into Endgame?
I mean, Dr. Strange seems to know what's up.
I mean, he still got dust. Like, I guess, man, that's a sacrifice play. And that's one of the big themes for Avengers that we can talk about is that the theme of sacrifice from the first movie where Cap says, you don't lay on the wire to take care to protect your friend. Tony's like, I'd rather cut the wire, to this movie where flat out Steve's telling Vision, we don't trade lives.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, come Thursday, we're going to have to do some trading, honestly. But yeah. I think that this movie does a really good job of always setting the stakes. By the time Thanos is making his final march towards Vision, they've ratcheted to a point where the tension's palpable. You can't breathe. You're watching a CGI monster walk. And that's another thing here. Most of this movie is CGI.
Yes. You're right. And you wouldn't even know it.
Like, Josh Brolin fucking acted.
Yes.
And they found a way to digitize it and convert him to a purple hell monster.
Yep.
But make no mistake. He acted. He emoted with his face and with his eyes. Really well done. Beautifully done on his part. Awards should come his way if they give out awards for these things, which honestly, evolve awards, because hey, we're here now. Circus should have gotten tons of awards for all his work on everything. And Brolin should be in that category too for his role with Thanos. But he makes that slow walk, and it's that walk of inevitability. I really liked it when Cap catches his hand and Thanos is like, oh, you're strong. He's like, oh, you're not that strong. And just puts him right in the CTE protocol. Yeah, a lot of concussions handed out by Thanos at the end there. And the good guys almost look like they win, because even before Thor should have gone for the head, Scarlet Witch blows up the Mind Stone. That's supposed to be game over. But the Time Stone says, no, sir. They reflect it. He misses with the hammer, should have gone for the head. And Thanos snaps his fingers, and 50% of the universe, is wiped out. Now, we're given a scene at the end with little girl Gamora inside what is spoilers, probably the inside of the Soul Stone. All the souls had to go somewhere, Susan. The question I have is, was that a weird decision to put that moment there? I've heard people talk about this, like, say, you should have just stayed with the scene. I thought that having him cut away to an undetermined time and place, dealing with the ghost of his dead daughter who he killed, I thought it was really well done and kind of added a level of poignancy and points again to this being his hero's quest.
Yeah. No, the storyline with Gamora in general, I mean, it humanizes him in a weird way. I mean, he's obviously evil as fuck, but
very much so.
That's when that like extremely well acted. It's so well acted. The emotions on his face when he's with Gamora. I mean, I think it was necessary for sure.
100%, 100%. And we get the very end where they realize the cataclysm that has befallen them. The team is broken. Tony and the Nebula are left alone on an alien planet. All bad. And Farmer Thanos, chilling.
Yeah.
Chilling. And you notice the title card at the end says, Thanos will return.
Yeah. I mean, this movie
Because other movies, it's like Captain America will return the Avengers or the Avengers will be back. This one was Thanos will return.
Yes. It's 3 hours of Thanos bitch slapping the Avengers.
Everyone that we've cared about for the last 10 years. You love them, aggressive. We'll punch him in the face.
Like, quick.
Real quick, fast, in a hurry.
Yes. Just like bitch slapping these motherfuckers. I mean,
the way he tears the mind stone out of Vision's head is so goddamn.
It is violent.
So bad.
He just scoops a little bit of his brains out.
When he snapped, I was quiet in the movies. And then at the very end of the movie, I remember being, because the theater, when we watched it, theater was fucking dead silent.
Yes.
And I was stifling laughter because I was like, those crazy sons of bitches did it.
Yeah.
You psychopaths, you actually blew it all up.
Yeah.
And guess what, guys? Knowing that there's going to be a Black Panther 2 and knowing that Spider-Man Endgame comes out in July, none of that diminishes the effect of the thing that you saw on screen. I would say that if it does, you suffer from a deluded imagination and you don't like storytelling.
Yes. Which is how are they going to do it?
I love you.
How can you not be curious?
That's why I said you can't spoil me, and I'm not asking you to spoil me. Actually, don't. If you spoil this, I will not only block you, I will find you.
We're fighting.
For real, she's crazier than I am. Like, she's way worse than me. No one knows that yet. They'll figure it out.
Well, you just told some people, the two people that listened. Yeah.
Thanks, Mom and Dad. but no, this is one of those things where the story isn't, do they get these heroes back? The story is, what do they give up to get them?
Yes.
What road must be taken? And you and I are going to talk predictions off the podcast because I don't want to do that. I want this to be kind of evergreen. The last movie that we watched for the Between Two Palms, MCU rewatch, mouthful, whatever we're calling this thing, was Ant-Man and the Motherfucking Wasp.
Yes. Which
I would like to see officially being called The Wasp, also featuring assorted Ant-Man.
Woo! Agreed. Yes, assorted. Multiple.
Multiple Ant-Man. I'm not here to diminish the men. But they are truly the backseat of this movie. The movie is directed by Peyton Reed. It was produced by Kevin Feige and Stephen Broussard. I hope that's pronounced right. It cost $195 million to make. It brought home $622.7 million. That's a win, by the way. If people are like, oh, it did make a billion can't be the baseline. It can't be the benchmark.
Yeah.
Marvel may have broken movies, but $600 million return on about a $200 million investment, it's a pretty good day at the office.
Yeah. Let's not be greedy.
Oh, as someone who bought in-game tickets for 11:30 Thursday night, there are certain aspects of my life I'll be very greedy. So this is at 2 years after Civil War. And Scott Lang is coming up on his release from house arrest. And I think that one of the big charms of this movie is that coming off Infinity War, it was almost like, here's something where the stakes are uber personal.
Yep.
Because the first scene we get is Jan Van Dyne sacrificing herself to bring down a missile. And you get the moment where they're saying goodbye to Hope for the last time and leaving the house, and then Hank comes home alone. And the rest of the movie, you have to understand, is about a little girl getting her mom back.
Yep.
And another little girl getting her dad back. Because the next scene we see is home arrested Scott Lang playing with Cassie. And I've talked about it on lots of shows. Cassie is a superhero in her own right. Cassie is a young Avenger. I think we're going to see Cassie on Thursday.
Really?
I really do.
Oh, man.
I really hope so. But, yeah, it's awesome for me. It's just this. People say that, yes, Captain Marvel was the first movie with a female lead. But this is the first movie for me that centered women, specifically daughters. The driving force behind everything Scott does is his need to not disappoint Cassie. And they go so far as the beginning, in the middle of Act 3, for him to get the big heroic speech from his daughter, where she says, you'll always find a way. You're my dad. You're a superhero. You'll figure it out. I believe in you. And that's the pep talk he needed, which, by the way, that's two Marvel movies who the biggest pep talk was given to him by a child twice in a row, because it happens again in Captain Marvel.
You're right.
And just, I don't know, it's just this movie, we watched it last night. I've been thinking about it all day because it's so good on doing something that's so important, because this is not the movie that centers me.
Yeah.
But it is, our friends, Greg and Abby, have two little girls. And he said, which is the first movie you'd show Juniper? I said, I'd show her Ant-Man and the Wasp. Hmm. When she's old enough and it's not scary, and these two, Ant-Man and the Wasp, because it's about a girl and her dad. And Hope and her relationship with Hank and the desire to find Jan. And it's just, the villains are cool. Walter Goggins is awesome.
The Ghost is amazing. It's a family film.
It's a family film. We talked about this last time. We talked about Ant-Man, but the blended family of Scott Lang with his ex-wife, her husband, and their daughter, that they're all co-parenting together. Their relationship isn't toxic. It isn't like, oh, I hope he fails. It's supportive and real. And I thought that it was really well depicted. Someone who lives in a family like that felt seen watching this movie. And they felt like, oh, it can be not just a good thing, but a great thing. And a supportive, positive thing. And that's one of the reasons why this movie is so great. Also, the action scenes are so goddamn cool. The fight yes. with the Wasp in the kitchen. I was like, she throws a salt shaker and blocks the door with it. I was like, who is the guy who thinks of that?
The scene where she, or the bit where the knife flies past her?
Yo.
Yeah, it's runs the Wasp is a badass. Yes.
No, the Wasp is she is no shit the star of this movie. Evangeline Lilly did an amazing job of, because the Hope Van Dyne they constructed for this movie is a complicated character.
Yeah.
She's dealing with her, I guess, abated feelings for Scott. Her feelings are still not great feelings about her father, and the feelings of abandonment with her mom. And then when you enter in the tragic side story of Ghost and Bill Foster, you know that these characters feel sympathy for her because she's a victim of the same thing that they're trying to rescue her mother from.
Yes. Sometimes you say these things and I'm just nodding over here.
It's an audio medium.
Like, yes, that's true. Yes. Oh my God.
What did you
say? Movie, but you get completely different things from them. It's amazing.
What did you get from it then? So besides it being a family movie.
I can't believe that Paul Rudd has two Marvel movies. I mean, Paul Rudd, the vampire of Hollywood. Like, that's exciting. He's hilarious. Like, he can do anything and he's funny. The bit where he's like, he shrinks down to like child size and is running through the school in that oversized sweater.
I'd forgotten that until last night.
Oh my God, it is just the scene alone of him like trotting down the stairs to get out of the school in the giant hoodie. Like, it is so funny. He's so good at physical comedy. And we need that in this universe where, you know, half of the population of the universe dies in a snap. Like, it's nice to have this film before we get into the darker shit. Like, I love how they balance the, like, themes and
that's one of the
severity
of
the movies.
So the end of Phase 2, if you go through the movies, is not Age of Ultron. The last technical Phase 2 movie is Ant-Man. Because, and it's my theory, just of whatever, they go for a palate cleanser in the to end the phase. They want you to remember this is still Marvel. The end of Phase 3 is not Endgame. The last movie of Phase 3 is Homecoming. So I think you're right. I think it's purposeful. The palate cleansers, the pacing of these films is on purpose. Purposeful and on purpose, Jesus, Daniel. And it really pays off, like you said, with the audience perception, because while this is a personal story, it's also like, it's got all the staples of a great Marvel movie. It's got two amazing chase scenes, including one through San Francisco with incredibly shrinking cars, which is way more fun than as any right being.
The special effects, I think, they do a even better job. Like, right. the first movie is, it's wonderful. I mean, the action scenes.
Very much like, these things existing in CGI atmospheres, like having him shrink down and run through with the ants, like in the walls.
Yeah.
Like, yeah, that's cool, but it's all animated. Having him turn giant in the middle of the fucking day and walk out to a ferry.
Yes. Him.
That's a big ask of an effects team.
Yeah. No. I mean, him like riding the car or the truck, yo, like kicking and pushing like he's on a fucking skateboard. It's so great. It's so imaginative. Like, it is such an imaginative story, and the way that they do it with the special effects is really great. But yes, Evangeline Lilly here too is incredible. And anytime I get to see a lady kick ass.
There's never been like a long running Ant-Man or Wasp book. And I think almost because it's hard to show their powers in the comics, because it's hard to do the dynamic shrinking and growing.
Yeah, you need the space.
I'm spiking in, I'm sneaking in somewhere, or I'm big and fighting someone. It's never this constant vacillation where they use it. Like watching them, the two of them fight Ghost at the quantum tunnel, where they're shrinking and growing like constantly. It's just,
yes.
It's a level of, it's something I never considered with these characters.
Yep, and they interact so well in that fight scene as well. That's a really good point.
This movie, of course, just casually has Michelle Pfeiffer as a supporting character, because why not? When you can get Catwoman, you get Catwoman.
Academy Award winner?
No, really? I thought 2-time nominee.
Ah, oh, crap. You're right. Michael Douglas.
Michael Douglas has got an Academy Award.
I read this. I've already forgotten.
More awards just coming out of everywhere. And also T.I., who I'm pretty sure has a Grammy. I'm gambling.
What? Like, T.I.? Again? T.I. is in 2 Marvel movies.
It's true.
That's, like, that sounds silly to say out loud, right?
It doesn't sound unsilly.
What? It's great.
He
I feel like I'm starting to sound like a broken record. Every time we talk about a movie, I'm like, I loved it. It's great. I loved it.
For the record, T.I. has 3 Grammys, just so everyone knows.
Oh, my God.
Some would say that's too many. I'm not going to. I'm just going to say, as a statement of fact, T.I. has 3 Grammys.
We live in Atlanta, so I feel like you cannot say that.
As a statement of fact, I think I'm telling you, he has 3 Grammys. I'm not telling you if he deserved it or not. I answer there were 4, but he has 3. Anyway, good for T.I. Good for Clifford. Go for the EGOT. If he can get an Oscar for his performance in Ant-Man. but again, this, like you said in the Doctor Strange movie, you love a good sidekick. Luis and that whole team are back. Their security company is called XCon, which is one of the underplayed jokes of the entire Marvel Universe.
Yep.
And this time we get Luis doing his whole read back thing with Evangeline Lilly and Scott Lang, and it's just so well done. And I guess there is a such thing as truth serum.
Yes, there is. Now we know.
You can always tell when you just saw a movie because I make an in-joke from the movie. So Susan, this is our last batch of Marvel movies before Endgame. How do you feel prepared?
Yes. Oh my God. Yeah, I've never, cool. I feel like I'm a pretty over-analytical person, but the first pass with these movies, I was just excited to be there with you. And this, watching them again, I'm excited to be there with you. Plus I get to like bug you with questions and like theories, and you know, it's been so fun. I'm sad that it's over, to be completely honest. I'm not excited about going to see the movie at 11:45 because I'm an old person, but it's going to be great. I'll take a nap. It'll be fine.
We've got to redefine what over means, because you and I are going to be back for a very special in-game review on this feed, and that's one of the part of the announcements we're going to be making. We're setting up a Between Two Palms separate feed. It's going to be on Spotify and iTunes, because this show is going to continue. We haven't figured out the format or the regularity or the topics yet, but we're going to be reviewing things and talking, and I think we're going to try to break it up into seasons. Chris is going to help me out with that on the formatting side, just so I don't feel like I've taken on another job, which I obviously have, and created another star, which I obviously have. But all these episodes will be collected there, and they'll also be collected in my Instagram story, headed into Endgame. There'll be a link to each one on Spotify so you can follow along and get prepared in the hours before the end of the beginning of the Marvel Cinematic Universe. Susan, again, thank you for doing this with me. It's been a lot of fun. This is something I usually do with people across the country or across the world sometimes, and it's nice to be able to share it with you. And it's super nice that you're fucking great at it.
Nah, you're crazy. Don't do that. I don't know what I'm doing. I appreciate it. I don't know.
Maybe that's working the best. Maybe you just, you know, go out there and having fun is what's making it so good. But again, we appreciate everyone who's listened. Stay tuned. We will be back with the in-game review probably mid next week. We want to give people time to see it. But we are 100% full steam ahead. This podcast, I'm not committing to any sort of regularity with it. But we'll be talking about different things. I know we have on the docket, we want to talk about the Umbrella Academy. We're going to talk about the two seasons of Runaways. We're probably going to bring in some guests and also talk a little of Steven Universe. So if it's something that my wife and I think is interesting or fun or cool, or it's something that we've done together, I'm probably going to try to share it on this feed. And you get to hear Susan and Susan's husband do what they do best, and that's talk.
So excited. Anything else
you want to say before headed to Endgame?
I guess I just want to say that I really appreciate the positive feedback that we have gotten. I don't know how much of it is just to troll you, but I really appreciate the positive feedback. It means so much, you know, saying nice things to other people. It's impactful, and I appreciate it. That's the best.
We both do. We both do. And yeah, so I guess that's going to be your show for today. Go enjoy Endgame. Again, if you haven't gotten your tickets to our private viewings, what are you doing? If you're in DC or LA, go ahead and buy those tickets to a private screening. Watch it with a very fun crowd and ask questions afterwards at the live shows. And I'm excited to see you guys out there in DC this weekend. I'm flying up Saturday morning and flying back Sunday morning. So I'm going up just for this. And I look forward to seeing everyone there. And I look forward to us all surviving Endgame together, because we can do this. That was your show. This is your outro. See you guys next time.